Wisconsin's new commutation advisory board met for the first time last week, hearing from 12 of the more than 800 applicants who are seeking to have their prison sentence shortened.
The board was created earlier this year by Governor Evers. He appointed the 10-member committee made up of former judges, attorneys, law enforcement officials, and nonprofit leaders.
Some of the offenders spoke about their participation in restorative justice efforts to take accountability and help victims and their families heal from the harms caused by these crimes, which ranged from burglary and drug offenses to homicide.
Daniel Cerny told the board about meeting with the sister of the man he shot and killed in 1999 when he was 16.
Mary forgave me during that visit and gave me a hug. She told me that I need to forgive myself and use the gifts God has given me to help others. Mary took the time to get to know me and gave me a chance. And that is something I don't deserve.
We're checking in on the commutation hearing and the role that the victims and their families are playing in the process. Natalie Yar is statewide Pathways to Success reporter for Wisconsin Watch, where she reported on the return of the commutation process in the state. Natalie, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
Explain, what is a commutation and how does it differ from a pardon?
So a commutation is an official way to shorten a sentence for someone convicted of a crime in Wisconsin. And it's different than a pardon in that in Wisconsin, at least, pardons can only be granted to people who have already completed all of their sentence and in fact have to have been like crime-free for, I believe it's 5 years after that. So a pardon doesn't, in Wisconsin, shorten your sentence in any way. A commutation would.
And commutations, they haven't been offered here in Wisconsin for 25 years. How big of a deal is this opportunity to be available again?
So from the people that I talk to, people who are incarcerated and advocates for people who are incarcerated, this has sounded like a very big deal. There's been a lot of uncertainty in the process since this was first announced in April. You know, there are a lot of questions. And so, for example, I think advocates have been unsure how much to get their hopes up, but have told me, well, we can't dismiss this opportunity. This is the opportunity and we have to help people apply for it and kind of hope for the best. So it is a big deal. And a lot of incarcerated people have applied. I think based on a public records request that one senator did, it looks like at least 800 people completed applications.
You talked with one of the applicants seeking a commutation, Natalie Murphy, who was convicted of shooting and killing her boyfriend in 2015. What stood out to you about your conversation with her?
The thing that stood out to me the most was the things that Natalie Murphy has done while incarcerated. Specifically, of great interest to me was the fact that she's spent about 7 years, I believe, working full-time as a certified peer specialist, which is essentially like kind of like a counselor-type role that people in prison can be hired to do to provide a free service to other incarcerated people and be willing to discuss their own experience and listen to their fellow prisoners as their fellow prisoners are navigating new situations, making choices, thinking through the choices that they're making. And of course, she worked for a dollar an hour because that's the most you can earn in the Wisconsin prison system unless you have an outside job. And an outside of prison job. And she said that basically doing that work has given her new ways to think about her own experience and to think about what she's done, what she's been through.
And she seems to be focusing, as she said, on education to prepare for reentry.
That's true. She's also been a full-time UW Green Bay student for years now. And what stood out to me is that she, you know, heard about this opportunity and kind of couldn't believe that it was real and applied and spent like 2 weeks going back over her application to think about, like, have I really described correctly who I am, what I'm like? And yeah, it'll be interesting to, you know, I heard her testify last Friday at the hearing. I also heard, you know, the victims, family members of her victim testify about, you know, why they opposed her commutation application. But it will be, you know, very interesting to see what happens. And I think she's probably a, you know, a great example of who's applying and of the, you know, ethical, you know, challenges in deciding, you know, or the debate that exists about whether a commutation is appropriate or not.
Natalie, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be on. Thank you very much for having me.
That is Natalie Yar, statewide Pathways to Success reporter for Wisconsin Watch. She was with us to share her reporting on Governor Evers' new commutation advisory board. Now we're focusing on the themes of restorative justice that the offenders discussed with the board during their application hearing last week. To help explain how restorative justice programs work and what role that victims and their families have in these processes, we turn to Mary Trajano. She's a former Milwaukee County Chief Judge and now the director of the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice and a clinical professor of law at Marquette University Law School. Mary, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
At least six of the applicants that presented to the board last week, they talked about working with some form of restorative justice programs. Can you give us a brief overview of what those programs look like?
So restorative justice, as defined, is a unique and deeply human approach to harm. And it really begins with the people who have been most affected by a harm. It's always victim-centered. It's entirely voluntary for both the person harmed and the person responsible for the harm, and certainly not for everyone. And it's not a program that an offender completes to get something. It really is about what accountability requires, taking responsibility for the harm, listening to its impact, answering difficult questions that victims may have, and where possible, taking steps towards that harm repair.
You say this is not for everyone. What are some reasons that a victim or their family might want to participate in restorative justice, but also might not want to do that with an offender?
Yeah, so when restorative justice is done well, there's significant preparation before anyone ever sits across from somebody that's harmed them. It can take months, sometimes much longer, to determine basically whether people are ready and whether a dialogue can occur safely and meaningfully. Some people just don't want to sit across from somebody that has significantly harmed their loved one. And when it's done thoughtfully, the experience can be transformative, not only for victims, but their families and the person who caused the harm as well. But it takes a lot of effort to determine whether people can come together.
During the commutation board hearing last week, Sabir Wiltshire talked about receiving forgiveness from the son of the man he shot and killed in 1995 when he was 15 years old. And let's take a listen to that.
One of the things that pains me the most is knowing that I'm the reason Mr. Anderson never got a chance to see his son grow into a man that chose to forgive the person that took his father away from him. And I can't begin to tell you how grateful I am that Mr. Anthony Anderson, allowed me to apologize to him.
How common is it for a victim or family members of victims to forgive the offender and support this push for commutation?
Yeah, it's somewhat rare. Again, partially because of the significant amount of time it takes to prepare the process itself. But I have to tell you that when it happens, the restorative process can really be transformative for both sides. It can be years later where survivors or family members may decide that what they actually witnessed, like I'm hearing here with him speaking, is actually genuine accountability, remorse, understanding of the harm, and change over time. And that's exactly what victims often look for when they are meeting one-on-one with a person who caused significant harm to them or their family.
The commutation board also heard from victims who were, you know, very opposed to shortening the offender's sentence. Natalie Murphy, convicted in 2016 of shooting and killing her boyfriend, Andrew Dahman, and the victim's brother, spoke about how commutation would be detrimental to his family's healing.
Almost a decade later now, I feel as if my family is being suspended over an ocean of sorrow at the whim of a commutation board. Andrew will never get to know his children. He will never have a second chance to be a father due to Natalie's actions. With this single act, the lives of everyone he touched has been irrevocably destroyed.
Do you see situations where an offender's release causes more pain to victims, whether it's an early release or a completed sentence?
Absolutely. Victims get to determine what healing looks like for them. And it may not be forgiveness, and it may not be supporting someone's commutation. And we see that all the time. Again, it's victim-centered, so they get to call the shots on what they believe healing is about. And you may have family members who are split. Someone may want, right, to forgive or support a commutation, while others absolutely don't want that to happen. And restorative justice doesn't require consensus in that kind of situation. Those differences aren't a failure of the process. Really, they reflect the reality that grief, trauma, forgiveness, accountability, and healing, even to that degree, are deeply individual. And the people harmed get to choose whatever path they want to take.
Mary, when we were hearing these incarcerated people making their cases, I heard the echoes of, I am a different person today than when I committed this crime or these crimes. How, through restorative justice, do we know that a person is truly changed?
Justice doesn't require us to really answer that question, because it's not necessarily about the end result of something that the person who has harmed someone is experiencing. It's what the person who was harmed is experiencing and what they believe. If they feel the person, through the restorative justice dialogue, has taken responsibility and accountability, they will feel that. They will see that. But it's not something that we have to discern through the restorative justice process. Again, it is a process about centering the victim and trying to work towards their healing. Now, I do have to say that I have seen in many situations the byproduct of a restorative justice dialogue or restorative justice circles is people who've harmed others or are responsible for harm actually transformed. They are genuinely remorseful. They feel that they want to be part of harm repair instead of just sitting in prison. They feel like they should not be defined by the one act that they committed to harm somebody. And so the process itself is something that we want to support victims with. And it's usually up to them to discern what they want the outcome to be.
Mary, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Mary Trajano is a former Milwaukee County Chief Judge and Director of the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice at Marquette University Law School. She was with us to discuss how offenders and victims work through restorative justice practices, which was a theme of the first meeting of Wisconsin's new Commutation Advisory Board.